Good morning. It's lovely to see you all. My name's Paul. I'm one of the ministers here. And it's great to see everyone this morning. So welcome from me, if I can add my welcome to Liz's. A number of years ago, in fact, I know the exact number, and I'll tell you why in a moment. A number of years ago, two friends of mine got married in the wintertime. And despite the time of year and despite how bad the weather was, they decided to have all the photos taken outdoors after the service. And they had a very young and rather cute little bridesmaid. She was probably about 3 or 4 years old. And she had a sweet little basket of flowers that she'd had to carry through the service. And she was there in all the photos holding this little basket of flowers. And by the miracle of Facebook, I'd written this week and planned to tell you this story. And then this morning when I switched my computer on, the first thing that popped up was a photo from that wedding with this bridesmaid at the front of it, telling me that it was 23 years ago today that this happened. So I know exactly how long ago it was. And we stood outside having these photos taken, and we were absolutely frozen. The entire congregation of us were frozen to the bone, and this poor little bridesmaid must have been frozen too. It was perishing cold. But she was incredibly well behaved. And she stood shivering in her bridesmaid's dress for all these photos with the happy couple. Not only were we frozen, but we were starving. And this poor little bridesmaid must have been... I don't know whether you've noticed, but when people have weddings, they time them exactly. So by the time you actually get to eat, you feel like you haven't eaten for a day and a half. So we were stood in this icy, freezing field, frozen to the bone and starving hungry. And every single person out there, I guarantee you, there was just one thought in everyone's mind, and it was, what time is lunch? That was the only thing that anybody was thinking. Not only were we frozen and starving, but we were bored. Because these photos went on and on and on and on. And this poor little bridesmaid with her basket of flowers, who was standing so demurely at the front of every single photo, bless her, must have been bored stupid. We had every imaginable permutation and combination of family and friends. Yeah, we had aunties in big hats and all the second cousins that don't know how to tie their ties. Could you all come together and we'll have a photo? And it just went on and on and on. And this poor little bridesmaid stood at the front, freezing and starving and bored and smiling for the camera. And the photos went on and on. And then suddenly, without any warning at all, the little bridesmaid took a deep breath and filled her lungs, and she screamed. And as she screamed, this basket of flowers went in the air, and the flowers went everywhere. And she ran off towards the building, still screaming. I'm absolutely convinced the scream lasted the entire way to the building. The rest of us all wanted to do the same, but she was the only one that actually did it. Sometimes it builds up inside you to the point where you just hit meltdown. Sometimes it builds up inside until you can't take it anymore. And one way and another, the lid comes off and it all comes out at once. Last week, we started a new series that we've called The Land Between. Well, we didn't call it that. It's based on a book called The Land Between, so the title was a no-brainer. But over 5 weeks, we're thinking about times of change in our lives. And we're thinking about the transition times that God sometimes leads us through. And those times can be deeply painful. They can also be times of massive spiritual growth. They can be times when God gets hold of us and does deep, deep things in our lives, but they can be painful times. And the companions that we've got on this journey over 5 weeks are the people of Israel and the story of the people of Israel being led through the desert. And so thank you for taking us to the desert this morning, because that really is where we're focusing over this 5-week period. The people that have been taken out of the land where they'd been well provided for, but they'd been in slavery. And they knew they were being taken to a land where everything was going to be much better. But for a long period of time, they were in this land between, and it was painful and it was difficult. And last week, we started that journey with them, and Astrid took us to the first stage of that journey, where those people started complaining. They started moaning. And we don't know exactly how long they'd been walking for, exactly how long they'd been eating manna that Astrid was talking about last week. They were eating manna, just manna, nothing but manna. And for a whole lot of the people, they got to a point where they started to say, I am sick and tired of manna. And actually, I'm sick and tired of walking through the desert. This has gone on long enough. I've had enough now. I am sick and tired of this. And we've all been there, haven't we? One way and another, we've all been in that place. This week, we're moving on from that place to what happened next, particularly for Moses, who was the leader of the people, the leader that was having to field this ongoing barrage of complaints from the people. Because for Moses, the dam reached bursting point. For Moses, he got to the point of meltdown. And the passage I want to read to you overlaps with where we were last week and what Astrid read and spoke from last week in the book of Numbers. And I've very deliberately not had this put up on the screen, so this wasn't an error. Sometimes when we read the Bible, we do a really funny thing and we kind of go into church voice. And we read it without any emotion, just like it's blank words with no feeling behind them. And we read, why have you brought all this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? And that is not how Moses prayed the prayer that I'm about to read you. That is not how he would have been speaking when he prayed the prayer that I'm going to read you from Numbers 11. This is what Moses said. The people have been moaning at him and moaning at him and moaning at him. And Moses said, why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their ancestors? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat to eat. I can't carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you're going to treat me, then go ahead and kill me right now if you care for me. Don't just leave me to face my own ruin. It's not comfortable, is it? It's not meant to be comfortable. It's somebody at the very end of their tether. It's somebody who's reached the absolute limit of what they can cope with, and it's unrestrained honesty between him and his God. Moses didn't ask for this job. He didn't want this job. He didn't feel up to doing this job. And now he's reached complete breaking point. And one more person comes to him and says, seriously, Moses, manna, again? And it's like the weariness and the discouragement and the helplessness all build up to a crescendo. And all at once, the lid comes off. And all at once, all the frustration comes out at once, and this kind of explosion of hopelessness and despair. And he says, I can't do this, God. I can't do this anymore. I wonder if you've ever been there in your relationship with God. And at first, it sounds a bit like Moses has taken all the complaining of the people and just racked it up another notch. But there's a crucial difference between their complaining that we looked at last week and what Moses does in this passage. Because the people were moaning and complaining about God. Moses is bringing his pain and his turmoil and his frustration to God. And those are two massively different responses. But even so, the desperation in his voice, the absolute end of his tether is very, very real. As he looks at the thousands of people that he's supposed to lead, and as he listens to their gripes and their whinging, and as he deals with the fact that he just doesn't have the answers. He looks up to God and he says, "They're not my kids. I'm not their mum. I just can't carry them anymore. They're too heavy." And sometimes in the land between, we get to that point. Whatever the thing is that we're carrying, sometimes we get to the point where it is just too heavy. It's just too much. The physical pain that seems relentless and never lets up. The loss and grief that just doesn't seem to diminish, even as time goes on. The responsibility that keeps us awake night after night after night, worrying and churning over and churning over. The feelings of failure that sit in our stomach and never let up. The anxiety or the worry that just dominates our waking thoughts and is always there, even when we're trying to think about something else, it's always there at the back of our minds. Whatever it is for you, it becomes like a weight in your arms, something that you have to carry. And the weight wears us down and wears us down until the point where we find ourselves crying out, "I can't carry this anymore." And Moses lets it all out to God. And he finishes with that stark reality that right at that moment he would consider it a kindness if God would put him out of his misery. We British people have introduced a concept to our faith that's not there in the Bible. You could call it stiff upper lip Christianity. The idea that emotion in general, and particularly any kind of public display or outlet of emotion, is somehow unseemly before God, is somehow out of place in church. When I was a really new Christian, I was probably in my late teens, 18, 19, something like that, I got involved with a mission organisation based in Wales, and they were absolutely wonderful people. I still look back at the things that I learnt there that have been foundational in my Christian life. They're a wonderful group of people. I did a couple of projects with them, and then I went to their annual conference. And at their annual conference, they had an array of brilliant speakers who were impassioned and who were motivational and who really inspired us to walk closely with Jesus. And it was a fantastic conference, but I remember one elderly man who had been on the mission field overseas for years and years and years, and he spoke, and it was a powerful and stirring sermon, but the bit that sticks in my mind, and this is 30 plus years ago, I guess, certainly a long time ago, the thing that sticks in my mind was that he talked about the evil of emotion in the church. And he said, I remember his words, he said, really quite proudly, "I will never wear my heart on my sleeve." And I remember even as a brand new Christian sitting there and thinking, Jesus did? Why won't you? But he wasn't on his own. And I think many of us will either have been taught something similar or will have spent many years in churches where the practice is so similar to that that's what we've grown up with, that's what we have experienced as normal in church. In church where laughter gets frowned upon. In church, where if we give somebody a round of applause, it feels incredibly uncomfortable and we all feel awkward and wish it wouldn't happen. In church, where if somebody sheds a few tears, we all stare at our feet and wish they would pull themselves together. In church, where if we find ourselves feeling emotional, we desperately try to contain it so we don't make a fool of ourselves. And I've heard that phrase used so many times by people talking about their own emotion. I didn't want to make a fool of myself. And if you've bought into stiff upper lip Christianity, then the idea of venting anger and frustration and what's really in your heart at God is kind of unthinkable. Stiff upper lip Christianity is not the faith of the Bible. And it is not the faith of Jesus. It is not how we are designed to be. And it's not what church is supposed to be. Just take a look with me for a couple of minutes at some of the heroes of the Bible and how they related to God. Look at Elijah. Elijah, who was a prophet of God at a time in Israel where the king and queen of Israel were insisting that everybody stopped worshipping God and start worshipping an alternative god called Baal. And the climax of the story comes when Elijah has a face-off with 450 prophets of this other god called Baal. And they stand on top of a mountain together, and the prophets of Baal build an altar to Baal, and Elijah builds an altar to God, and they agree between them that they're going to call out on their respective gods, and whichever god answers by fire is really God. And the prophets of Baal spend an entire day, morning and afternoon, and they sing and they shout and they pray and they call out on him and they do all sorts of fairly unpleasant rituals that they were into at that time, and their God does exactly nothing. And then as it gets to evening, it's Elijah's turn, and Elijah basically says, come on then, God, show them what the real God looks like. And fire comes down from heaven and doesn't just consume the offering on the altar, it consumes the altar itself. It burns up the rocks of the altar. And all the thousands of people that are stood there watching this whole thing fall down on their knees and say, Elijah's God is the real God. If you're a preacher, that's a pretty good day's work. After that huge high, the next thing Elijah does is that something happens inside him, and it's almost like he crumbles. And he heard that the queen was on the warpath, and he heard that the queen was saying, I'm going to get you for that, Elijah. And what Elijah did, after facing off with 450 prophets of Baal, he legged it. And he disappeared into the mountains and he hid and he prayed and he said, I've had enough, God. Take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. I can't carry this anymore. Take a look at Jeremiah. Jeremiah was another prophet of God in the Old Testament. And God gave Jeremiah a message to take to the great and the good in Jerusalem at that time. And it was an unpopular message. It was a message about God's judgment. It was a message about the ways that they were letting God down. And he preached it to all the powerful people in Jerusalem. And they put him in the stocks. And they left him there overnight. And the next morning, when they let him go, Jeremiah stomps off in a rage and he rants at God. You can read this in Jeremiah 20. And basically Jeremiah says, Oi, God, that wasn't the deal. That wasn't what I expected. They took the mick out of me. They called me names. None of them like me, God. And I wish I'd never been born. Literally, what he says. Read it in Jeremiah 20. But in essence, what he was saying is, hey God, I don't think I can carry this anymore. I don't think I can carry this anymore. And if you read the story of Jonah, he does the same at the end of the story in chapter 4 of his book. If you read the Psalms, they're packed full of raw, heartfelt cries to God. If you look at Jesus, he wept in front of his friends. And he cried out in anguish to God the night before they arrested him and crucified him. And it's not a mistake that these prayers are all there in the Bible. It's not a mistake. A prayer doesn't start with "Dear God" and finish with "Amen" and have a whole load of religious claptrap in the middle. Prayer is when we are real with God about what's going on in our lives and when we invite him in to the situation that we're in. Prayer is honest with God. And when you find yourself in the land between, when you reach the point of, "God, I can't carry this anymore," when you feel like it's all falling apart and you're heading for that place of meltdown, at that point you have a choice. At that point you have a choice. Because you can allow that pressure to push you away from God. And we've all seen that happen. You can allow that pressure to push you away from God. Or you can allow that pressure to push you to God and into his arms. We have that choice. But for each of these people, for Moses and for Jeremiah and for Elijah and for the people that wrote the Psalms and for Jonah and of course for Jesus himself, at their meltdown moments, they turned to face God and they let it all out to God. And I love the fact that these stories are in the Bible. I love the fact that they're there in their rawness and honesty. I love the fact that nobody looked at them later and said, "Well, that's a little bit unseemly. Let's edit that bit out. You can't talk to God like that. Let's make it look like Moses was feeling a bit less suicidal at that point." I'm so glad that God placed those stories in the Bible with their rough edges, with their messiness. And I'm certain that he did it so that you and I could know that we're not alone. When we get to that point, when it feels like we are right at the edge, when it feels like we're looking into the abyss, when it feels like we're at the point of meltdown, we know that we're not alone. And we know that there's a God who is there with us and for us in that. We're in good company. We've got a God who listens and who knows and who cares. And I wonder whether he also put those prayers in the Bible so that when we reach a point, which we sometimes do, where we just can't begin to put into words what we're feeling inside, we've got prayers that we can draw on. God's given us in these prayers of Moses and Jeremiah, and particularly in the Psalms, prayers that we can make our own. When we can't find the words, prayers that we can make our own to bring our reality at that moment to God. Because deeply honest prayer is an incredibly powerful thing. Deeply honest. What's really going on? Not what I think God wants to hear. What's really going on? Prayer is an incredibly powerful thing. So you might be, right now, you might be journeying through your own land between. Or you might have been there sometime in the past and never fully worked through all the emotions and the effects that those experiences had on you. Because sometimes it's like a part of our life almost gets stuck and can't move forward until we experience God's presence and healing in that particular experience from the past. Sometimes we find ourselves living with feelings from something that happened years and years ago sometimes. And we just get stuck there. I want to encourage you to come to God with honest, heartfelt, real prayer. Don't tell him what he wants to hear or what you think he wants to hear. He doesn't want our religious words. He doesn't want the right theological answer. He wants to hear what's in our hearts. He wants to hear the real us. And if you've got no idea where to start with that, I want to make a suggestion. I want to suggest you start reading the Psalms. Just start reading through the Psalms. Because they're wonderful, honest, God-focused poetry. Prayers and poetry. And in the Psalms, there's highs and there's lows. There's absolute swinging from the rooftops praise. And there's absolute down in the gutter despair. Right next to each other. But it's all God directed. Start reading, and when you find a line or a phrase or maybe even a whole psalm that you think, crumbs, yeah, that's me, that's what I want to say, then use that as your own prayer, or maybe write it down and piece together something from different lines from different places that express what you want to say to God, but turn it his way. For some of us it's really fresh. For some of us it's happening right now. For others of us, there's stuff that we've locked up inside and it's been there for years. Some of us, there's things that we've not only never spoken to another person about, but there are actually things that we've never really, honestly spoken to God about. It's up to you whether you ever share it with another person, but please share it honestly with him, because he's the one that really can make a difference. Because if we carry those things, and if we go on carrying them, they just pull us down. Don't let them pull you away from God. Let them push you towards the God who cares and who knows and who can make a difference.